Welcome back to Palisade Radio. This is your host, Tom Bodrovics, and joining me today is returning guest, David Brady. He's a money manager and Sprott Money contributor and expert on all things gold and silver. How are you today, David?
Hey, I'm great, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Great to have you back. Before the call, we were discussing kind of a hybrid term that you've coined and you seem to be using quite a bit on Twitter, hyperstagflation. Could you define that for us?
Yeah, sure. So starting with stagflation, what does stagflation mean? It's two terms put together, stagnant, stag, which means that the economy is slowing in recession or even in depression, meaning that you're seeing, as we're seeing today due to the lockdowns, rising unemployment and potentially a wave of bankruptcies coming too on top of that, that is just beginning. That is stagnant economy. It's not growing, in more often than not, like in the 1970s, it's decelerating or slowing. On the other side of the coin is inflation. So while the economy is suffering, at the same time, prices are going up, which is counterintuitive as one of the worst, it's worse than deflation for the central banks, because you've got a situation where the economy is getting worse, but prices are going up. And those people most affected by such a scenario is the middle class, the majority of the population, because people are losing their jobs, they're losing income, they're at the same time their savings are being inflated away, and the prices of everything, especially those things that they need, like necessities, is going up. So they have less income coming in, they have less money in the bank because the value of their savings is being inflated away. And at the same time, that which they need is increasing in cost. So that is what stagflation is, the worst case scenario for basically everyone. Hyperstagflation, well, that is basically meshing stagnation of the economy with hyperinflation. And the reason why I say that is a risk is because the central banks are, and the government are engaging in fiscal and monetary stimulus on steroids, with much more to come, in my opinion. Demand for discretionaries may be dropping, but at the same time, you're seeing a soaring demand for necessities. And case in point is meat. Meat prices have skyrocketed recently. And that's because meat processing plants in the U.S. have been closed down temporarily. My concern is that such supply shocks could become more pervasive and non-temporary. And I say that because, as I mentioned earlier, we have a wave of bankruptcies potentially about to hit the U.S. and global economy. If that occurs, those supply shocks won't be confined to one or two sectors like gold and silver, meat, currently housing. It'll be pervasive and it'll be potentially non-temporary. And that's the biggest risk here in the near term. On top of that, what we've seen recently, the trade war between the U.S. and China has escalated. Now, why is that a risk? Well, China, their wheelhouse is producing cheap products. And we import an awful lot. This is the whole reason for the trade spat in the first place. We have a massive trade deficit in the U.S. with regard to China. And if we raise tariffs, Trump has already raised tariffs, but if this trade war escalates dramatically, those tariffs could go up significantly, or they could simply, as Trump literally said himself, we could literally cut off China altogether. Well, what happens to the prices of goods in the U.S. if you make Chinese goods more expensive in the U.S. in dollar terms through tariffs, or they stop their importation altogether? Well, you're going to have to find alternative products either produced domestically, which are going to be higher in price, and potentially from other countries, which may also be higher in price. But what you're for certain doing is you're creating supply shocks outside of just specific centers, your sectors. You're providing or causing supply shocks in other areas of the economy. And more generally speaking, you're increasing prices across the board. So not only do you have potentially a wave of bankruptcies affecting the supply chain, you have this trade war also affecting the supply chain. And at the same time, the Federal Reserve and global central banks and global governments are printing money and spending it left, right, and center. Is it any surprise that you know to expect stagflation or potentially even hyperinflation under those conditions? Because at the same time, we all know that this money printing is doing very little for the economy. We have a pandemic going on. We have lockdowns because of it across the world. We've seen what that means in just the past 2 months alone. And now we're seeing a slight reopening. What if we go, there is a second wave of this COVID-19 virus, and we are all going to go back into lockdown later in the year. What happens to those businesses that are still struggling, that are still open and still struggling to survive? They're probably going to close permanently. So you've got more unemployment, more loss of income, even slower economy. At the same time, you've got these supply shocks on goods and services, not just in the US, but worldwide, but focusing on the US. At the same time, money's been dropped from not helicopters, but bombers overhead. We're already seeing this. We've seen money being provided, $1,200 being provided to almost every adult in the US. We've seen plenty of that in Canada, too, in terms of CERB and increased child benefits. And now we've had this $4 million debit cards sent out for $2,000, or you could use them to spend $2,000, that have been sent out to 4 million Americans. That's helicopter money. And so you got money raining from the sky. At the same time, you got supply shocks. At the same time, people's incomes are dropping and people are losing their jobs. You may not see a massive rise in consumer discretionary products, the things that you don't need, but in the things that everybody needs to buy, the necessities, you're going to get rampant inflation, in my opinion. So that's what hyperstagflation means, is that the economy is deteriorating, but at the same time, prices are going up. And that is the worst case scenario for the middle class, as I mentioned earlier, because their incomes are going down, the value of their savings are going down, but the cost of everything to them, the things that they need, such as meat, and probably other food prices and so forth, and even beyond that, gas, rents, healthcare, they all go up. And that really penalizes the people, most of the people in the economy.
So as you look at all these different factors that you just mentioned, David, you have something you call your FIPEST XM process. And maybe you could explain to us a little bit about the factors that go into that and some of the trends that you see stacking up in that process or your checklist, let's say. Where are some of the corners of the market that are pointing all in the same direction?
So FIPEST XM, that stands for fundamentals. The F is fundamentals. And when I say fundamentals these days, all that means is what the Fed and global central banks are doing, at least with respect to the markets. Intermarket analysis. So for example, gold and silver are inversely related to real yields, and real yields in turn are determined by nominal yields and inflation. So looking at how each markets that are correlated with each other, either perfectly or inversely correlated on an ongoing basis, gives you insights into what's going to happen going forward. Positioning, the COP positioning tells you the positioning of the banks and the positioning of the large speculators. That can be used as well to get some insights into where markets are going to head. Elliott wave theory, that's the E. Also Fibonacci levels. You can Fibonacci levels for the short term, but Elliott waves for a bigger picture analysis of what the market is telling you in terms of what the market's telling you where it's going. And then you've got sentiment, which has been a fantastic predictor of gold and silver where passions run high. So sentiment's a very important tool to use, and an extremely good contrarian indicator, but more inside markets that are heading sideways, trapped in a range, less so when they're trending one way or another, which gold and silver are trending up now. And that's one of the T's in my FIPEST term. The other T is technical analysis, traditional technical analysis, classicals, highs, lows, moving averages, bull bear flags, you name it, channels. And the last one is XM, excluding manipulation. I say that because I do believe certain markets, especially precious metals, have been manipulated one way or another for various reasons, mostly down. And you need to consider that when certain conditions prevail that suggest the likelihood of manipulation in the near term, such as the banks are massively short, you're coming up with an illiquid period, such as a holiday period. You often see manipulation around Chinese New Year holidays, the Independence Day in the US, and so forth. So when I looked at those various factors back in 2015, excluding manipulation, they all pointed north. And that's why I started buying gold and silver back then. What do they tell me today with regard to each market? Well, I went through the fundamentals and extrapolating what that means going forward. We'll start with equities. I said that back in 2018 that we would see a drop in October of 20 to 30%. And that's exactly what we happened. I said on December 24, 2018, that we would see a rally similar to the one in November of 2008 before we'd see the next leg of the crash down. And that's exactly what happened. I didn't expect it to go to new highs, but we did. But then, and it happened a little later, but starting in February of this year, the stock market peaked, and then it turned down again rapidly by March as the lockdown started to spread across the world, including the US. We got to a low of the 2100s, and now we're heading back up to, we're above 3000 today. And many people, you know, said that, well, that couldn't happen given what's going on with the economy. But I've been saying since we were back in the 2100s, 2200s, that the economy and markets parted ways a long time ago. And there's only three things that drive stocks. And it's not the economy or corporate earnings. It's liquidity, liquidity, and liquidity. Just like in housing, it's location, location, location. And what have the Fed and global central banks been doing? Printing. On steroids, and the government is coming out with a different stimulus measure or package almost every day. So is it any surprise to everyone that the S&P is back above 3,000, the NASDAQ is within 2% of its all-time highs, even while the economy is still in really bad shape? And a lot of people are getting optimistic now that certain parts of a number of states in the US are reopening. We're seeing this in Canada here too. But I don't think that's going to last. I think there is a high risk of a wave two of this virus, and we'll be back in lockdown by the end of the year. So, but will that mean that the stocks drop precipitously? I do see a reversal here in the near term to 26, 2700. And I look at the various, I won't go through each and every point in my process, but when we get up to 31, 3200, well, we're above 3,000, but if we get up to, you know, even a little bit higher, sentiment's turning bullish again. I expect a pullback. It's a contrarian indicator. I expect a pullback to 26 to 2,700 over the next few months. And then ahead of the election in November, I expect it to bottom and start to turn up again. And if and when Trump is reelected, again, a fundamental factor, I expect that'll be the bottom, and then stocks will just take off from that point. We could see 4,000 or more from that bottom, be it in October or September, before the election of the new president or the incumbent. So that's my expectation for stocks. A little higher here, sure, for the short term, very short term. Then we head down in the next month or two, and we won't bottom for about 2 to 4 months. And then ahead of the election, we go up to new highs. Bonds is an easier one. Bonds have been effectively capped. With all the money printing that the Fed's been doing, they've been monetizing rising deficits and massive debt of the U.S. government, and that's only going to continue. That's suppressed yields. To the extent that yields go up any higher, I think they'll formalize that cap on bond yields I've been talking about since the October 2019 FOMC. I think it'll make it easier for them to cap yields if they come out and formally say that we are capping yields, much like the BOJ did. And yields will have an asymmetric risk to the downside. Now, I don't think long-term yields will go below zero. I think the 10-year and a 30-year will be kept above zero so it can maintain a positive yield curve. To maintain the combined with rising stocks and a positive yield curve to maintain the illusion of everything's okay. But short-term rates will certainly go negative, even though the Fed funds may not do that. We will see. But what this does then, switching to gold and silver, is if nominal yields are capped, say the 10-year is capped at 1%, and we do get, this is where it all comes together, you do get inflation, stagflation, hyperstagflation. If the nominal yield is capped at 1% and inflation goes up, real yields go down. Gold and silver are inversely correlated to real yields. If you doubt that, just go back and run charts going back over many years, 20 years, 30 years. They are inversely related to real yields. If there's an asymmetric risk to the downside in real yields and it's capped by the cap in nominal bond yields, meanwhile, inflation is going up. That means gold has a firm floor in place and it's going to just take off. And that's why I said recently in my article for Sprott Money that this recent pullback in gold and silver is extremely healthy. I believe at the bottom of this pullback, both metals are going to take off, but especially silver. Silver always lags to begin with in a bull market, just as it did in December 2015. Gold bottomed first and then silver followed. Silver is going to outperform gold going forward. Miners are just going to be explosive. They've already, I mean, Silje from bottom to top recently was up 150% in a matter of months. You can only imagine the gains in the junior silver miners when silver takes off again. It'll just be enormous. So that's equities, bonds, and gold and silver. The only other one I would mention, actually two, commodities in general, are going to see some strong gains, in my opinion, as supply shocks occur and you've got the money printing on steroids globally. But with regard to the dollar, there is a global dollar shortage, which does suggest that the dollar should go up. But the problem is the Fed is printing more and faster than anyone else right now. They're playing catch up. Their balance sheet has doubled in a matter of weeks. We had a balance sheet with a three on the front, a three handle, 3 trillion and change. It's 7 trillion and change now. And, you know, I believe the Fed's going to be trying to buy everything going forward. I've said that multiple times. So you can see the balance sheet. I won't even say you should. When the Fed's balance sheet hits 10 trillion, that won't be the top. It could be 12 trillion, 14 trillion, 15 trillion, 20 trillion. I mean, at what point is all confidence lost in the Fed, U.S. policies, and the dollar? And by extension, all global central banks, especially the ECB and the BOJ, they're all debasing their currencies. So when is confidence lost in all fiat currencies? In the short term, it's a tough call to make on where the dollar is going. It's been going sideways for weeks now. And arguably since 2015, I mean, the level now is where it was in March 2015. It's going to break one way or the other soon. It remains to be seen which. Now, it could break up and it could go up significantly if it does. It could go down too. I don't know. But what I do know is long term, I can't say anything with certainty, but my opinion strongly believe that the dollar is going to suffer greatly in the years ahead. It'll be devalued substantially relative to the rest of the world. But at the end of the day, and this is the key point for me, is that all fiat currencies are being debased against each other. They're all printing. So they all look relatively stable against one another. And I look at the Dixie chart for this past, you know, 2-3 months shows that clearly. But they're all falling in real terms against hard assets and goods and services. This is another reason to expect stagflation and hyperstagflation. I understand a lot of people are saying, oh, we're in deflation. And I agree with that synopsis. We're in deflation today. But as Mike Maloney said the other day, he confirmed that too. But like me, he believes that by the end of this year, you'll likely see the beginning of stagflation more generally, and potentially in 2021, hyperstagflation take over for all the reasons I mentioned earlier. Supply shocks becoming more pervasive, non-temporary, aided by a mass wave of bankruptcies, massive escalation in the trade war, and all of the money printing that's currently going on and is going to continue and potentially get worse. Confidence will be lost in fiat currencies. We will get inflation, potentially hyperinflation, but the economy is going to deteriorate. And my final point is, my expectation is that we go up to a blow-off top in equities by 2023-2024, and from that point the Great Depression begins and could last 10 to 15 years with a drop in real terms in stocks 90%. And in such an environment, there is only one asset or one sector to hold, in my opinion. You've got currencies being debased, so it's not, foreign currency is not going to help to a great degree. Equities dropping in real terms. Bonds, given the inflation, the yields have been capped, so the real yields have dropped through the floor. So you've essentially lost money on bonds over time. There's only one, commodities will go up, so that's one potential one. But the real beneficiary of all of this stagflation and hyperstagflation going forward and perform as well during a deflationary period is precious metals. Gold and silver are only your safe harbor. They are the new Tina. There is no alternative. And if you don't have any today, I recommend your listeners at least buy some, if you can get a hold of it, because physical has been hard to get recently, but at least have some. It's an insurance policy, but it could be also the greatest investment you ever made other than a farm, of course.
Well, David, you've hit almost every single one of my points that I had on my list here. Before the call, we were discussing about why silver is somewhat more of an asymmetrical bet right now. Could you give us a little bit more on that?
Yeah, I mean, I was saying when the gold-silver ratio was back at 100, up to 110, that was a record high for the gold-silver ratio, meaning that for 1 ounce gold coin could buy 110 ounces of silver coins. And that was unsustainable. And again, I mentioned that sentiment especially in the precious metals market, has been a fantastic contrarian indicator. So people see 110 and think it's going to 120, 150, 200, whatever. I see the opposite. Historical precedents show that it's more likely to go, the risk reward is turned to the downside when you reach such levels. And sure enough, we're already falling. And as I mentioned earlier, if you look back at previous bull markets, gold, not always, but typically outperforms silver initially. The big brother leads the way. But silver being the poor man's gold, when people catch on to what's happening and they go into a bank and they say, hey, I got $2,000, I'd like to buy some gold pelies. And they're told, well, that won't even buy one gold coin. Well, what else will I buy? What else can I buy? And the answer is, I can give you 40, 50 silver coins. Oh, I'll take that. Silver takes off at that point. And I believe you're seeing it already. I've been saying this for the past few weeks. It's already started. And it's only going to become more obvious when we bottom here in gold and silver on this next wave down. I think you're going to see silver is just going to blow the roof off. It's going to leave gold behind eating its dust. It's looking at the sentiment in the market. It's looking at historical precedent. It's looking at how it works fundamentally for the ordinary person on the street. And if you look at the average gold to silver ratio going back through history, I'll give you a few data points. The average over the past several decades has been around 30-1. The average ratio between gold and silver over centuries has been 15-1. The average amount of silver relative to gold in reserves on Earth, the world, is 8-1. Silver, half of silver produced in the ground, more than half, is used for industrial purposes. A lot of people cite this as a negative, you know, given what's happening with the economy and so forth, and companies going bankrupt and global trade falling and so forth. No, the fact that silver is dramatically more used than gold in industrial practices tells you that the investable silver, if it's 8-1, 8 ounces of silver for every 1 ounce of gold on Earth available in reserves, and you've just taken away over, let's use 50% of those 8 ounces of silver. Now there's only a ratio 4-1, 4 ounces of investable silver for 1 ounce of every investable portion of gold. Well, if the ratio is at 110-1, and now it's dropped back below 100, and the average amount on Earth is 4-1, is it really that incredible to believe that silver could drop to 30-1, the average over the past several decades, or overshoot to the downside, maybe to 20-1, 10-1, 5-1? I mean, whatever the number is, in order for that to occur, silver has to dramatically outperform gold going forward. And that's what I expect to happen.
And as you're saying, for silver to dramatically outperform gold, does that also go for the silver miners?
Yeah, but here's the issue I have with the miners. And the miners in the short term are going to, you're going, if silver juniors have gone up 150% in the past few months alone. And I posted a tweet there recently showing that after spending 3 years, I believe it was from 2016 to January 2019, they dropped, what was it, from 12 to 4, I think is the number. And then erased that drop over the next 8 months in 2019. What do you think silver juniors, SilJ, I mean, it applies to all the miners, but I like SilJ because I think silver is going to outperform gold and juniors are going to outperform the seniors in terms of the miners. So SilJ is my preferred vehicle to play at the index level. That, to me, it's obvious that if it plays out this way, that silver outperforms gold and we're going to see a massive rally ahead, then SilJ is just going to absolutely explode beyond belief. I mean, the numbers are going to be astronomical. What, 500%, 600% in the space of a year, maybe? But the problem is Canada sold all its gold, as everyone knows, but they've got huge amounts of reserves in Canada, one of the biggest producers in the world. Well, what's to stop them from nationalizing all of the miners? We're already seeing that in certain countries, but Zambia, I believe, is one of them. But you could see that spread to Canada and other countries, see nationalization of the miners. So that's the one cap you have to be aware of long term, whereas the government steps in and says, you know, you've got massive gains in your miners when they provide you the market price, but, you know, they take you out and the currency that you get in return continues to be debased. So you could lose value from that point forward. But that's the only downside I see for miners long term. Short term, medium term, they're going to do the best going forward, and especially in the silver space, in my opinion. One other point I wanted to make with regard to gold versus silver long term is another reason why silver may outperform gold is there is a risk. It's not small, but it seems small today, is that gold could be declared illegal again like it was in 1934 by the U.S. It could be declared illegal for ordinary people to own or to have in their possession, and they have to turn it into the government. Well, if that were to occur, you can only imagine what's going to happen to silver prices. So that's just another factor you have to keep in mind. And even if it doesn't happen, the concern that it may happen will increase demand for silver as well, on top of, you know, the fact that silver is cheaper to buy for those who don't have as deep pockets as many of the buyers today, including the central banks and the big banks. So, yeah, I like all of the precious metal sector. I believe it's the new Tina asset, and especially like silver, but short term, medium term, the junior miners are my preferred vehicle. I've been saying that for quite some time.
Excellent. And just to pull on one of those threads from earlier, do you have any price targets for the next leg down for gold and silver?
Yeah, in my article for Sprott Money last week, I provided those. Typically, I use, you have to use paper markets. I mean, one of the issues with the paper market is they got divorced from the underlying physical market, because physical literally disappeared. And I'm not going to cite conspiracy theories, but something's funky when the physical market literally dried up on the Friday. I can't remember what the specific date was, but in March, maybe I can look it up here. But it dried up on the Friday before the Fed came out. Yeah, Friday, March 13. I think it was the Fed came out on the 15th. I may have my dates wrong. But the following Sunday, Powell came out and issued his whatever it takes, where he slashed the Fed funds by 100 basis points on a Sunday. And gold and silver physical metals virtually disappeared across dealers across the world. The COMEX had to go begging to London for gold the following week. Because deliveries, they were overwhelmed by delivery requests. It just seemed strange that Friday before Powell's announcement, physical gold and silver almost disappeared. And, you know, premiums are still high in silver. They've dropped in gold. But that's primarily because the prices have caught up to some extent since. Now, I think prices in gold using the paper markets, I wanted to make that comment about physical because paper markets, they could go the way of the USO ETF in oil in the future. You've got counterparty risk with regard to an ETF that you don't have when you own the physical metal. But using the paper markets as a guide, I have said that I think gold could drop to 1653 or 1577 before it heads back up again. Any break of 1776, the high in gold recently, would negate any further downside, in my opinion. But whatever that bottom turns out to be, I think the next rally in gold will be huge. But it'll be even bigger in silver. The downside, I've said 17 in silver, potentially as far as 1625. Those are the initial targets. And in SILJ, I'm looking at, you know, areas around the support levels at 10, 9, and 845. If we break below 845, that could force down a drop down to as much as 650. But honestly, in the short term, I'm not too concerned. I think these are going to explode higher. And one of the key markets I'm looking at is the, other than FX, the biggest market in the world, which is bonds. And if we see yields capped, and we start to see the inflation pressures build, as Mike Maloney and I have been saying, heading into the end of the year, real yields are going to start falling even further and may not stop. And at that point, you've got a floor in gold and silver, and up they go. And the miners, in the short term, medium term, especially SILJ, you're going to see some really crazy numbers on the upside.
Excellent, David. It seems to me, discussing all these same things with different guests, it almost seems like we're beating a dead horse a little bit at times. And before the call, you and I were discussing how to kind of really put the puzzle pieces together, try and make sure you're not in an echo chamber, and question your assumptions. Would you like to share with us how you think about that?
Yeah. So whenever I come up with what I think is a guilt-edged theory or hypothesis, I step away from it for a bit and I can go out and work on the farm, and then I come back, okay, how could this be wrong? And for example, I mentioned one of the foundations of this theory is that we get stagflation or hyperstagflation ahead of the Great Depression and how that all filters through the various markets. Well, how could I be wrong? Well, a lot of people have been saying recently, contrary to what I'm saying, is that deflation, deflation, deflation. And could we get deflation? Yeah, anything is possible. Nothing is for sure. Anybody that says it is are lying. But let's look at that. Deflation. Well, gold and silver tend to go up in deflationary periods as well. In currency terms, especially when the currency's been printed into oblivion, but especially against everything else. Like, I'm a big believer in cycles. I think housing's a very overvalued asset these days and overleveraged, and I think it's going to run into serious trouble in the next few years. Well, even if gold stays where it is, if housing prices drop precipitously, you'll be able to buy a lot more property, which are gold and silver, than you could today. So in real terms, even if we get deflation, gold and silver will outperform.
But will we get deflation?
There's just too many factors. You get deflation in consumer discretionary products. You know, nobody's going to be going out and buying Gucci jackets or Gucci belts, or very few people are. And you're already seeing bankruptcies occur because of that, which is reducing disposable income, and which is what people are using as the argument for why deflation will occur. But at the same time, you're seeing money being dropped from helicopters, and soon it's going to be bombers. All of the central banks of the world are printing money on steroids. You got supply shocks already in certain sectors, which risk becoming more than temporary but permanent, which will be further reinforced by this wave of bankruptcies taking more supply out of the market, and trade war escalation with China taking more cheaper products off the market, thereby creating relatively higher prices. When you consider those factors on top of all the money printing, I just find it extraordinarily difficult to consider deflation as even a remote possibility in necessities. And why do I focus on necessities? Because that's what everybody has to buy. That's what matters. Does it matter if you can't buy a Gucci jacket tomorrow? No. But does it matter if you can't put food on your table? Yes. And that's the inflation people should be looking at. It's convenient that the CPI leaves out food and energy, two of the most important commodities that people need, the most important commodities that people need, alongside healthcare. And other than oil dropping recently, I expect oil to go up to triple digits next year. Healthcare, well, we know what's happened to the cost of healthcare. And then food, we've seen in meat prices, they skyrocket. I expect that to expand beyond just meat to various other prices as well. So my method is to look at my gilt-edged theory, and the one that could harpoon it is that we do get massive deflation and a depression tomorrow. When I say depression, not just a depression in the economy, but markets collapse also. I can't see it with the amount of money printing going on. Powell coming out saying that he'll do whatever it takes, even though he's taken negative rates off the table for now. Doesn't mean he can't do it in the future. It doesn't mean that yields can't go negative anyway. Real yields are already negative. These guys are going to literally buy everything to keep this Ponzi scheme alive and kicking as long as possible. And my end game, as I've said all along, is if and when we get hyperinflation, while the economy is going in the opposite direction, and all QE and MMT and all the money printing is doing is further devaluing the dollar, fiat currencies, and pumping inflation, eventually the Fed and the other central banks will be forced to pull the plug. It's not doing anything except increase prices. At that point, that's when you get the Great Depression. That's when the collapse occurs. When they pull the plug because it does nothing except to serve to push prices higher, inflation ever higher, and they pull the plug, that's game over. And I don't see any other viable scenarios, realistic, high probability viable scenarios to that. Now, I could be wrong. I don't claim to say that I'm 100% correct, but I don't see any other viable scenario, Tom. I welcome one if you can think of one.
All the signs seem to be pointing in the same area, like you say, David. And unfortunately, it's one that seems to be pointing to a lot of suffering in the longer term picture. But that's why we're here and have these discussions, to be able to try and, at very least, preserve some of the buying power of the wealth that we've accrued over the years here.
Quick comment on that, Tom. I just want to say, we talked about this earlier. It's easy to sit here on my farm, hundreds of kilometers away from the nearest city, gold and silver locked away in vaults spread around the world, next to no debt, nothing that I can't pay off overnight, and food stored away and so forth, and talk about this stuff. But my heart bleeds if you think about young families, 20s, 30s with kids, sitting in a condo in Toronto or New York or London, and one of them's lost their job, the other one's worried about losing the other, and the worry and concern those poor people must be going through is horrific, and my heart goes out to them. The only thing I can say is, for those that have the means, you know, food is the most important commodity. If you can get a farm and grow on your own, that and create some degree of self-sufficiency. And it doesn't need to be a massive one. 1 acre will do. I highly recommend that. Get out of the city. That's ground zero for what's coming. If you can buy some silver, do so. You don't need, you know, tons of it. A few coins as insurance against what's coming. Reduce your debt, pay off your bills. Try and create some degree of comfort and peace of mind, some security, that whatever comes, you are to some degree prepared, because unfortunately, we're heading into very difficult times, to say the least. As I said, I think we get the greatest depression in 2023-24, and it's going to make the 1930s look like a picnic by comparison. And the reason I say that is we built up the everything bubble over 30 years. Great Depression followed 10 years, the Roaring 20s, and World War One. We've been building up this calamity for 30 years at least. So what follows is going to be even worse, potentially 10 to 15 years of hard times. So to the extent that you can, prepare yourself now while there's still time. And please don't be deluded into thinking the economy's reopening, everything's going to go back to normal. It's not. This is just the beginning, in my opinion. And I say this because I don't believe ignorance is blissful whatsoever. I'd rather be aware that there's a boogeyman in the room than not, so they can prepare for when he comes out next time. We need to prepare, all of us, for what's coming to any extent that you can. And in many cases, if I'm wrong and everything turns out to be peachy, and I think the probability of that is somewhere in the decimal places, there's very little downside to doing what I'm saying, because if it does turn out to be a peachy, we will get some degree of inflation from all this money printing. And say you store food and, you know, you buy a farm, all of those things are going to go up in value and you will have got them at lower prices. So I don't see any downside to preparing, at least to some extent. And my heart goes out to those people who are struggling already. It's only going to get worse.
Well, there's not much you leave to look forward to there, David, unfortunately. But like you say, it's better to be informed than not.
As I always said, Tom, and as many people have said, unfortunately, those of us who have some gold and silver are going to do very well, but it's going to be for the wrong reasons. It's going to be because of something horrific like hyperstagflation, where the economy is going in one direction and prices are going in the exact opposite direction. The only asset to hold, there is no alternative, is gold, silver, miners, short term, medium term, and a farm. Those are the ones, the essential items, and of course they include food and power and all those kind of things into it, but the assets that you need to own are those. So unfortunately, yes, that's the case, but I'd rather own them than not, given what's coming. Again, I say this so that people can prepare. Would I prefer to be wrong? Absolutely. I prefer, you know, I was Peter Pan living in Never Never Land. But when I put the drugs aside, I realize reality hits and you need to prepare for it. And I'd rather have my eyes wide open than sitting on a couch watching Netflix and ignoring what's going on around in the hope that it gets better. Hope is not a strategy. You need to take action and prepare and, you know, look after yourself, your family, your immediate family, and to the extent that you can, your family, your friends as well. So a community is everything going forward. And I'm just trying to look out for the ordinary guy. One thing I would say, Tom, is I do this for free. I don't provide any subscription. This is just my opinion. Take it for what you will. But I'm just trying to look out for everybody else based on what little I know about the markets and the economy and how it works.
Well, on that note, why don't you share with us where we can find you? I know you're very active on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me at Global Pro Trader, all one word, on Twitter. And you can also find me at sprotmoney.com. I write an article for those guys once a week. For me, they're the best dealership in Canada, gold and silver dealership, and perhaps North America. But I love the way those guys work. Buy all my metals from them, physical metals, that is. And Twitter, or you can reach out to me on Sprott Money as well. Response to any of my articles there.
Excellent. And we'll link to all of those in the show notes and your latest article on Sprott Money that we were discussing. Remember to follow Palisade Radio on Twitter as well. David, thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I really appreciate it.
We'll have you back soon.
Cheers.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?